The semi-annual warehouse clearance event is happening now at Sleep Outfitters. This is your chance to save big with up to 65% off mattresses store-wide. Plus, get a free adjustable base with select Sealy mattresses. These limited-time warehouse clearance deals won't last, and with our lifetime price guarantee, you can rest assured you're getting the best deal. The semi-annual warehouse clearance event, only at Sleep Outfitters. Visit sleepoutfitters.com to find a store near you.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now, her book Poor was a massive favourite with you, listeners to The Last Word, because you voted it Listener's Choice in the Irish Book Awards in the year that it came out. It also won Biography of the Year, and it has been a sensation, one of the biggest selling Irish books, non-fiction books, in yonks. Catriona O'Sullivan is back with a new book, Hungry, A Biography of My Body. Catriona, great to see you again.
Great to see you, Matt.
Okay, explain this, A Biography of My Body, and why it is that it's gone by the name of Hungry.
Yeah, so when I wrote Poor, I'm just really grateful for to the listeners, by the way, for the award. It sits really happily alongside my other award in my house, so just to say that. After Poor, I said, I'm done. Like, I don't want to share any more personal stuff. But I share a lot on social media and I talk a lot about my body on social media. I have loads of women followers and some men. And I chat a lot about how I live in this space where I really appreciate my body. I really am proud of it. I feel of all of it's done, all it's done for me and all it does for me. But in the same breath, I think these critical thoughts, I wish it was smaller. I wish it was less lined. I wish my bum wasn't that big. I wish it would perform better. And it kind of got me thinking a lot about, whenever I share about this on social media, I get a barrage of responses to it. But then I'm also living in this world, Matt, where a lot of my friends, where I come from, who are poor women, women who come from working class communities, a lot of them are engaging in like flying to Turkey, getting gastric bands, getting gastric sleeves. I got a gastric band, like engaging in really kind of scary behaviours in order to try to shrink themselves. And sometimes when you have a story in you, you just need to tell it. And so Hungry kind of emerged from this observation that where I come from in terms of my social class, the trauma I've experienced in my childhood, they all affected how I felt about my body. And also the world in which I live in, which tells women they should be a certain shape or size, they should ask for something, they shouldn't ask for things. It really got me thinking about maybe I could use my story to talk about something else. Poor is about poverty, and this is about what we do to people, to women and their bodies, and how that drive to succeed, to love and to be smaller can become pathological. And that's why the word hungry is used.
There's so much I would need to unpack out of all of that. But hunger implies a major problem in your relationship with food.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, explained, isn't it, by poverty, in the sense that you did not know where your next meal was coming from when you were a child or what it would be in it.
Exactly. So the book is themed around the things that influenced the way I felt about my body, but also about how hungry I was as a person, hungry for food particularly. And so it starts when I was really small. Now, it starts in this, like, I loved my body when I was a small kid and I really felt proud of it. I was great at sport and I didn't even know I was a girl. But I lived in a home where there was severe neglect. There was heroin addiction. We had no food. And I start my book talking about actually what hunger did to me, physical hunger. As a child going to school, the loudest noise in my head was my empty belly. Trying to engage in learning, trying to regulate my emotions was affected by that. I was expected to behave like everybody else, Matt. And yet I've got this deep hunger inside of me for food, for sustenance, for love as well. That's really interfering with my ability to participate in the world. So I start with that.
Sorry, but the education thing is really interesting, because this is why you have so many things like breakfast clubs in poorer schools, because it is shown that children who go to school hungry, they're thinking of their hunger rather than thinking of the things they could be learning. And that then exacerbates the disadvantage.
Yeah. And it's not just so the thinking of the hunger is the one thing, but we all know the word hangry. Every one of us knows I'm hangry. But imagine being 7 years of age and being hangry. We already can't really regulate our emotions as young kids. But imagine the added a bit hunger in your belly, that further exasperates an inability to control yourself emotionally. So in my case, I was hungry. It was interfering with learning, but it also made me really reactive and really difficult as a child. And we talk about breakfast clubs, school meals. The only meal I ever got, I got during my early childhood was school meals. And them meals saved my life, you know. And this is not an old story. This is why I tell the story now. Like about 5 to 7% of kids here in Ireland, we're the second richest country in Europe, are going to school hungry. This is not a new story. There's breakfast clubs happening across our country because we know that lots of kids are going to school hungry. So I wanted to talk about that. And I wanted to talk about the lifelong impact of that. Like, I'm always hungry. I don't think that's ever left me. The feeling that I'm not going to have enough has never left me.
And did that then lead to a difficult relationship with food as you got older?
I don't know. To be honest, I don't know. I do know that I have always been driven for food and always worried about having enough food. I think it left that mark on me. But because of the complexities of what I was living in, because of not just poverty and lack of food, I was also living in an environment where I lacked love and I had sexual trauma in childhood, which made me really question my body. All of them things came together to actually cause a disordered relationship with food.
When you say you thought a lot about your body, in what way?
Well, before anything bad happened to my body, I thought my body was the greatest place ever to be in. I was free, I'd cartwheel, and I was a football player, and I played as strong as
the lads. You were comfortable in your own skin.
I was comfortable in my skin, and I actually felt quite proud of my body. This is one of the things that I try to highlight in the book, is like a lot of my worth was taught to me, and a lot of women's worth is taught to them about what they look like. But as a little girl, I was a really beautiful little girl, and my family, the only love I really got was attached to what I look like. So I had this sense of pride around my body and what it looked like, but also had this hunger going on, this lack of food. And then I experienced these really traumatic abuse situations in my home, which I do talk about in the book, more so than I did in Poor. But the reason I did is because it's about my body. And what that did, I got these erroneous connections between being a beautiful little girl who people thought was pretty to these bad people doing these bad things to me. And my body became this place of shame. And I'll add this, and, you know, for listeners, this could be quite triggering, but like I had a pleasurable response to that abuse. And that added another layer of like, there's something wrong with my body. Why did I like this bad thing that happened? And I've learned through therapy, even talking to people who work in the Rape Crisis Centre, this is actually quite normal. It's quite a normal thing. We just don't talk about it openly. So I got these erroneous connections, and the result was my body was a bad place. And then I met the world, which says, if you reach this destination, if you get to this shape or size, if you get here, then you will be good. And for a child or a young woman who's really, really doesn't like her body, the idea of a destination becomes like the elixir. And to me, it became like the elixir. I was introduced to a slimming club when I was 16 years old. A girl who was clearly had low self-esteem, clearly didn't like herself, a teenage mother living in a council flat. And the idea of my body being solved by being a certain shape or size became like the pinnacle to me. And I don't know if that's the story for everybody. This book has a lot of complex issues in it, but I definitely know that we're taught our value is tied to what we look like and that the trends in what we should look like change. And some women are more affected by that.
This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I need only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
than others.
How much of it comes down to the way that people get judged? People get judged as they try and go on through life, sometimes by their social status, where they come from, whether they come from the right postcode if they're looking for a job. They get judged about whether they come from a poor background, whether it's their own fault. But how often are people judged by how they look?
All the time, women particularly. I think men get away with it a little bit more than women do. I think it is becoming an issue for men. I can see it with my own children, my sons particularly, that they need to be bigger and buffier. So there is pressure on young
men.
And
this is part of the social media environment in which young men and teenagers grow up.
Like the manosphere, all of this stuff that we're seeing, that's attached to looks as well. Like these men on the manosphere are big, bulky men, and they're encouraging that as well. So this is not a book just for women. But like by the age of 13, one out of two girls will report not liking her body. Like, they'll have dropped out of sport by 14. Majority drop out of sport by 14. And they will, and then one in three will have some sort of disordered eating by the age of 16. And a lot of that is tied to our value is placed on what we look like as women. And we see it all the time. Like, you just have to open a newspaper, open social media. A lot of women are judged on their shape or size. Yeah. And there is an idea that if you're fat or you're bigger, you're failing. That you're not controlling yourself. You're not able to control yourself.
You're responsible for how you look.
Yes. Yeah. And to be fair, it's the least interesting thing about most people I know. But the truth is, and I finished the book on this, like there's a very cynical world that we live in that makes a lot of money from ensuring that women don't like what they look like. It's a $1 billion industry. And if we can continue to make women not like what they look like and search for solutions to that, then there will be a lot of money continue to be made. And I think for me, I learned from the world that, you know, I grew up with Kate Moss. I was being compared to Kate Moss. I was never going to be Kate Moss no matter what I did. And then I've lived through five trends of what women should look like at this, because I'm old.
You're not even 50 yet, Katrina.
But I have five trends. Like, you know, I can list them. Kate Moss, Samantha Fox, Linda Lasardi, Ashley Graham. We're back to super skinny again now. There's been body positivity that lasted for a little while. You know, I'm not talking about people not being healthy. You know, when we talk about this, and obesity is an issue. Like, I have obesity. Like, my body is driven to be bigger. And whether that's because of where I come from, obesity is more common in people who grew up in poverty. I don't know. But I do know this, that the world which taught me that a certain shape or size was the solution harmed me more so than I think it harmed some other women who might have had more than I did.
I'm shocked to think that you went to Weight Watchers as a 16-year-old.
I know.
I mean, I thought that's for older people.
No, you could bring your 11-year-old daughter to Weight Watchers, to Slimming World with you. And that is still happening.
What age were you when you got the gastric band?
It was 7 years ago. So I was a grown woman. And the thing is, the book chronicles...
So why did you do that?
Because the destination, the idea of a destination was so big to me. And to be honest, when I was 21, this book is about hunger for connection. It's about hunger for achievement. And it's about hunger to feel okay in my body or to be smaller. And I went to therapy, and I really, when I went to therapy, the two things that I got from therapy first time around was the ability to find a good man and a decent relationship. And the other thing that I got was this, was my ability to go to college, to get a job. Like, that hunger was kind of in train. So my life was getting better, but I never really spoke about what happened to me when I was a child in that original therapy. And the idea of my body, I couldn't let go of the idea that one day I'd reach this destination with my body and I'd feel better about myself. And that continued to grow and grow and grow, despite the fact that my life was getting better. And so occasionally what would happen to me, I'd hear this new... So I met a girl in a cafe, and she said, oh, I got this... She was tiny. She used to be big. And she said, I got this gastric surgery. And I was like, oh my God, here's the answer. Here's the answer to everything.
How did it work out for you?
It was terrible. And I actually got sick every single day. So I chronicle this in the book, like, that I actually got small, though. I got to the size and the shape that I wanted to be, and I still wasn't happy. That was the biggest lesson, that it is nothing to do with my body size. How I feel about myself has nothing to do with my body size.
As we finish this interview, are you comfortable within your own skin now? Well, I think you're comfortable within your own skin for a long time, as in... mentally, but are you comfortable with your own body?
I have something I didn't have before now. after the band, I went, and I was getting sick all the time. I went back to therapy and I really talked about a lot of things. What I have now is I can open Facebook or Instagram and I can see the messages about being slimmer or smaller or smoother. And I'll have a thought, I need to do something. I'm not good enough. And now I have a moment after that. And the moment goes like this, Matt. Is this decision, the decision to try to shrink yourself or smooth yourself, going to help Katrina get back to that little girl who could cartwheel and play football? Is this a loving thing to do for your body? I never had that before. That's the gift of healing. There's no perfect arc in this story. I still doubt. I still worry that I'm not fit. I don't fit. I'm not small enough. But now I have a moment. And now I have a lot more capacity to say I'm good enough the way I am. I don't know if any woman ever will feel 100% in their own body. And I don't know if that's something I'll ever get to. But I have now a moment where I'm not making the decisions to hurt myself anymore.
Well, one last thing. Would the most important thing perhaps be that you're healthy?
I am really healthy. And that's the mad thing. When I went for the surgery, the doctor did actually say to me, you're really healthy. And I still continued. So sometimes knowing that you're healthy doesn't really matter, but I am really healthy and I'm really happy. That's the other thing to say. Like, it sounds like dark stuff, but this story is about being happy. I'm loved. I'm really joyful and I have a really great life. And I'm really, really delighted that I've achieved love and happiness. And that's the message of the book. It's like, even if you want to shrink yourself, it's possible to be happy.
Katrina O'Sullivan, great having you back with us. Hungry, A Biography of My Body is the new book.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.